welcome to The Pulse, Talking Tech at MHC. This podcast is produced by the Educational Technology team at Mount Holyoke College. Our staff are on hand to help faculty and students with the major technologies used in teaching and learning here at Mount Holyoke. If you'd like to hear more about what we do or collaborate with us on a project, please reach out to our team at edtech@mtholyoke.edu.
On today's episode, our colleague Lindsay interviews Liz Markovitz, Associate Provost and Associate Dean of Faculty, focused on faculty development, as well as Professor of Politics and former Director of the Teaching and Learning Initiative. They had a conversation about spec grading. Enjoy the show.
So can you do me a favor, and for those colleagues who might not know what it is, can you just explain or define spec grading?
Yeah, happy to do that. So spec grading is really, the word spec comes from specifications. And the short summary would be, it's an alternative form of grading, and it's really an alternative approach to student learning. And we can go into that more, but the nuts and bolts of it really focus on pass-fail assignments, where students, and really a pass is usually about a B level, is how people key it for those of us who were steeped in the traditional grading systems, right? So pass-fail assignments, students have the opportunities to either drop grades or revise. And the A, B, C, and D that you assign at the end is really based on students achieving or completing bundles of work rather than receiving letter grades on individual assignments. The assignments are either pass, fail, or in my class, I would say completed or invitation to revise. And then if a student does X number of these papers and X number of those papers or this activity and that activity, that would be an A bundle. Fewer number of things would be a B bundle. And ideally, in the fully revised, rethought course, those bundles, which equate to different grades, would be keyed to increasing complexity or more advanced skills, right? So an A bundle, a student who completes an A bundle has done more complex things, more advanced things, not merely more things. And so for me in my own course, the A bundle would equate to, I'm just going to look it up, an A bundle has a student entering into the scholarly conversation of political theory and doing metacognitive work around their own intellectual growth as a critical thinker, right? Whereas a C bundle requires a student to describe the basic ideas in the course and begin to analyze and write about them. So really different level of complexity. And within that, students are just completing them pass-fail, and I give them opportunities to revise each assignment because my goal is to let students learn as much as they possibly can in the course over time, rather than a single snapshot of whether or not they achieve something right then.
Thank you. Speaking of students, how have your students responded to that model?
I think it takes a lot of trust in the classroom, so you have to build that up. It's really, you know, our students tend to be quite invested in grades. They've spent their whole life making good grades and trying to achieve. And so the A really means something to them. So I don't want to take that away. I think we saw that in the conversations around pass fail during the remote year, right? A lot of students didn't want to go pass fail. They wanted their chance to get their A. So even if I think grades have this difficult, complex, and sometimes problematic history, traditional grades, there's still, I want to acknowledge the power and investment students have in them. I certainly had that investment as a student myself, so I get it. But I feel when you explain the system fully and explain that this is about giving students autonomy over their own learning, helping them become, as Linda Nilsen describes it, self-regulating learners. I think that is a really key moment. I find Mount Holyoke students will go down most any path with you as long as you explain why you're taking that path, right? They will do complex strange, difficult readings when you explain why it's connected to what you're doing in the classroom. So I really try to emphasize that at the get-go. And I think as more and more faculty use different forms of ungrading or unconventional forms of grading, it becomes more familiar to students.
Pivoting to a new system is a, you know, can be a big idea, and not for both faculty member and students.
Yes. Yeah. I think we all are invested and really familiar with the traditional system of each assignment gets a score based on some rubric, right? And then that's how I do my grading. For me, I came to it because I was so sick of the hair splitting I was doing. Grading was taking over my life and sucking the joy out of teaching for me, honestly. It caused enormous stress for the students. It got in the way of their learning more than aided their learning, in my experience. And I teach political theory. It was hard. You know, the more advanced political theory skills aren't yes or no answers. So sometimes I was really struggling to define what I was trying to grade in the course. Over the years, I developed more and more complex rubrics and examples and writing guides for students. And I found students asking, what do you want me to write in this paper? Which I found to be a heartbreaking question. I think a couple years ago during the pandemic, we brought in Felicia Ruiz Chavez, the author of the Anti-Racist Writing Workshop, which is such a great book. Beyond, I think, even if you're doing writing workshops for everything. And she talked about bringing joy back into learning. And it struck me that I hadn't thought about that in the classroom in way too long. And so I'd been using spec grading before that, but that really solidified to me why I was doing it. How can students be joyful learners in their studies? How can they achieve what they want to achieve? Why are they here? Rather than why I think they should be here, or the system, you know, the social political system in which we live that tells them this is what's important. I want them to engage with that in a different way.
I am moved by that motivation. Was there anything else that made you decide to first try this out?
I mean, I think sometimes I like novelty. and so, oh, interesting new idea. Let me see it. But then, you know, there's a series of books I read that have me more and more convinced that the traditional grading models come from a problematic place of ranking students because it's possible to rank students because we believe talent exists in a natural curve in the population, a bell curve, and that, you know, we should be able to rank students and tell other people where they ranked. This is a hierarchy of human value that I think has come under rightful critique in the last couple of years. And we in higher ed are just catching up with what that really means, what it really means to dismantle some of those structures. That doesn't mean it can't be done well. I think we have a variety. And again, the rest of the world operates this way to a large extent. So it's good for our students to have some familiarity with it. I myself was less and less comfortable of replicating that history in my own teaching. So that's a lofty reason of how I came to it. The more mundane reason, right, is just grading. You know, I was giving like A-/B+ grades quite often. I was less and less sure what that meant and how those compared to other students. And you can see, you know, a B paper compared to another B paper, and they're Bs for vastly different reasons. Is this paper polished, but the ideas aren't as complex or innovative? Whereas this paper, the student has this amazing, incredible idea, but maybe the essay, the writing itself isn't very polished. And that's really a reflection of their high school preparation rather than their potential contribution to the field of political theory. I didn't find that traditional grades could capture that. And I wanted to do something that was more amenable to that. And I also think spec grading, where students decide this semester, I want, you know, this course is one where a B is fine for me. I'm cool with that. I'm going to not do that last reflection paper because I have other things in my life I want to do that are important. I think it takes some of the moralizing out of grades because I think students feel that a grade is a reflection of their self-worth as a human being. And that is also heartbreaking, right? What does a grade mean? Well, with spec grading, the grade can mean what the student wants it to mean, right? So that's a big part of it.
Thank you. If a colleague wanted to try out spec grading for the first time, are there any particular tips that you have for them?
Yes, I think it's good to give yourself time to make that transition. A lot of folks toy with a few different elements of it before going all in. I do think it's once you go all in, it's easier and it's actually easier and it's more consistent for students. It's easier for them to understand. But at the same time, I totally get the wanting to just experiment with a few pieces of it here and there. I think, it's much easier to implement in a small course. So that's the first place I would try it. Because for me, I think that opportunity for revision, which I usually set a deadline in the fall semester around Thanksgiving break, right? Only because of the very real need to provide feedback and get it in and get grades in at a certain date. But other than that, you can keep revising. So that's obviously easier in a course of 18 than it would be in a course of 48. And so you might change the kinds of assignments you're doing in a course of 48. I also think there's great stuff on self-grading and peer evaluation that might be useful in those cases. I would read Linda Nilsen's article in Inside Higher Ed. You can Google that pretty easily. I have found a lot of people post on their personal websites about their adventures in spec grading. And so there might be someone in your field who's already done this. So I would just, some Google searches are great. Linda Nilsen has two books, Creating Self-Regulated Learners and Specifications Grading, the book, that might help with that. And also those books detail, right, the role of student autonomy and the role of rigor in spec grading, because I think for a lot of folks, there's this idea that spec grading isn't rigorous. And it's actually the subtitle of her book has a phrase, restoring rigor in it. And I found I was able to do that to my courses when I moved to spec grading. I could be much more rigorous. I could give much more detailed feedback and have higher expectations, and students could achieve those because the anxiety was, we know you learn less well when you're anxiety level is higher. And this model helps do that. So to get started, Linda Nilsen's work, websites, but most of all, TLI. Professor Jen Jacoby is running that now, and she has a wealth of resources. We really put a lot of these together during the remote year as people were revamping their courses. We thought this was a great time to just move to some of these models. And so Jen can consult with that. There's a bunch of us on campus who would happily consult, and Jen can pair you up with us.
Liz, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate the time. And I hope that everyone is as excited to hear about specifications grading as we were. Because I just like, the more that we can think critically about all phases of learning, I just think the more that we are doing right by our students. So thank you so much for joining me.
I totally agree with that. And I am so grateful for the work you and the EdTech team do to support everybody making big transitions in their teaching. And we know you've already done that a couple times. And I think that move, that support that you provided in the move to the remote year really got people thinking about what they're doing in the classroom and why they're doing each piece. And that, spec grading is part of that. And so I'm so grateful that you, EdTech team and TLI are there to support people as they keep thinking about this. So thank you.
Hi everyone, Lindsay here with one thing you should know about LITS. The Ask LITS board, which is located near the leisure reading section on the fourth floor of the library, includes an ongoing playlist of music suggestions from our community. You can listen to both this week's playlist and an all-time playlist by looking up the user Music From The Board, that's all one word, Music From The Board, on Spotify. We hope you enjoy some tunes.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode. This is Stephanie, here with the answer to our last technology trivia question and a new question to puzzle over. Our previous question was, the fastest supercomputer in Europe as of 2023 is LUMI, L-U-M-I. Do you know what that name means? And the answer, LUMI means snow in Finnish. Our new technology trivia question is as follows. What is the name of the world's first residential university? Tune in next time to hear the answer, along with more EdTech updates from our team. See you next time.